When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, we are live. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On today's show, I have a very special guest, returning guest. His name is Loomis, and he operates the Chant It Down Radio. I'll put a link to his shows. We've done many shows. Our last show was titled How Advanced is DARPA? That was very well received. People were really interested in that. But today, we're going to talk about something I proposed was to look into some of the work of Philip K. Dick, and what we're going to look into is this novelette, really only 40 pages long, that was originally published in 1956. Title of it is Minority Report. People probably know it from the Spielberg movie that featured Tom Cruise. I think that was 2005, like a long time ago. Still influential, but...
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Guy was way ahead of his time, like almost prophetic, and... really predicted some of this weird stuff. But some of the other shows that I've done with Loomis, people should check out. We did one about the global gene therapy deployment and its aftermath. We also did a cult James Bond and Ian Fleming. We talked about my bioweapon blues series, which was 47 episodes long. We did another one, PSYOP after PSYOP after PSYOP, which is really here. I just did a show with Dr. David Hughes, and he like wrote a 400-page book about the whole almost like encyclopedic use of these PSYOPs. People need to know this, how many there are and how many techniques these guys are using against us. We also did Black Pill Digest. We were just talking about it in the pre-show with Sean McCann, Hans Uter. And that was the title of that was The War on Humanity Continues. He also interviewed me about my book, Global Death Cult. And then we also did one titled The Lahaina Inferno. And because Loomis lives in Hawaii, and that Inferno and Desolation, really, it should be called the Inferno and Desolation because they've done nothing to fix it up. It's just incredible. It's just such an incredible group of clowns and losers who run this country. But there's no, we're sending money to Ukraine and Israel. And this is like one of the most beautiful aspects, really the pearl, a pearl of the American statehood is this beautiful city. They just are letting it lie fallow and really trying to get people to ignore it, and it's a shame. But we're going to talk again about Philip K. Dick. I have some slides. He's got some slides. But there's a lot here to unpack and a lot of themes. Philip K. Dick was integrated into this kind of short novelette that are very prescient and present in the world. So, Loomis, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on again, and it's good to work with you.
Yeah, it's great to see you. I know you just did some traveling. We were talking the pre-show. You were over in Europe and traveling around, so probably a little jet lagged. But for people who may not have heard our earlier shows, maybe you can just talk about what you've been up to and then like do a cursory overview of this novelette of Philip K. Dick titled Minority Report.
Yeah, well, let's see. I've kind of been taking a pause on my show, not a big one, but just because I've been trying to, I'm filming a documentary about ancient civilization, and that'll, you know, be, that's on the horizon. But yeah, I've been working with a variety of people lately and a variety of different subjects that are all part of the puzzle. And the thing is like, as you know, William, like when you get into this information, there's so many different facets of it that it's this huge tapestry. And even though like I've gone through a bunch of different subjects, like I actually went through a subject that I didn't even think I was going to go through about how They don't want us to travel anymore. And I just got back from a trip. So, you know, like they want us to not be autonomous. So I, you know, but every little part of this perspective is part of a big picture that, you know, we've been usurped from what life really is and an understanding of freedom and stuff. So, my subjects go all over the place. But this particular one here is really prophetic in the way that things are moving in the world, definitely. And I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, so maybe for people who haven't heard of Minority Report, you also looked into Philip Dick's other work. Maybe you can do a survey of what he wrote and why Minority Report is important and some of the themes or just the general outline of the story.
Yeah, so he was just a little background on him too. He's got like 44 novels and about 121 short stories. And he was born in Chicago, lived in San Francisco, and he described himself as having a transcendentally rational mind. And actually, he also described himself as a story he wrote later called VALIS, V-A-L-I-S. It's an acronym for Vast Active Living Intelligence System. He was a very interesting guy. Just to go into just in general, he experienced his actual work coming to life. He met two of his fictional characters in real life. And it seems like he was sort of tapping into another realm. It seemed to be able to predict the future and had some crazy insight where this world was going. And with this particular book, it's basically saying that in this book, they could predict a crime before it happens using these precog mutants. And it was a little bit hard to kind of figure out in the short story what he meant. So the movie actually brought it to light maybe better in that particular detail of they're kind of like psychic mutants that are attached to wired into a system where they can sense a crime before it happens. And then, you know, this guy, the main character, would get together and with his men and go bust someone before they even started the crime. And it sounds a little crazy, like thinking that that would be in this real world, but it really is kind of rolling toward that kind of guilty before proved innocent kind of thing. So yeah, the basic thing about this novel is that it's just, they're able to get that much more control on people.
Right. So it's like part of the system in the world, like it's in New York City. It's part of the system of control, right? So
yeah.
There's supposed to be some kind of like mutants that spit out the stuff so they can stop crime before it happens. And I think they brag in the novelette, like we've felonies have gone down 99%, right? Something like
right.
that. I think there's some stat, but it is weird. And so this guy, Anderton, is the main character. There's his wife, Lisa. There's this Whitwer. And then it kind of flips the script, Dick does, because one of the things, the precog things comes out, one of the three, right? And it says he's going to commit a crime, right?
Yeah.
So it's almost like who's going to watch the watcher? So he thinks that he's doing society, but then he becomes under the spotlight, right?
Yeah, and it quickly changes for him because suddenly he's a suspect, and he, in this extremely controlled Orwellian world, he's got very little time to escape all this before it comes after him. And he's like really barely ahead of his pursuers.
Right. So his pursuers are pursuing him. So you have those themes of like American society of like paranoia and conspiracy. Right. And so the name of the novelette Minority Report comes because these three precogs don't always agree. Right.
Yeah.
So they're like spit it out. So the Minority Report is, will Anderton kill this guy, Leopold Kaplan, who in the movie, I think the book is like plotting to bring into dictatorship or something like that. Right. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And then he doesn't even know who this guy is. He's like this Kaplan guy. He has no idea Like, how would he kill this guy he doesn't even know who he is? I think that's also in the movie too. I think that's pretty much the same in the movie.
Same thing. So he doesn't know who he is. Yeah. He's supposedly going to kill him. So it's another theme in this is kind of like predestination. It's not just pre-crime. It's like free will, right? So
yeah,
is this guy going to actually kill him? And it's really complex. It just shows how deep of a thinker Philip K. Dick was, really, because it's really just something else. He understood crime and punishment. He knew the themes of kind of like the standard criminal law, right? So criminal law, somebody who's been kind of been trained, you have to have like a mental element and then an act, right? So this book would be taking a significant part out of the law, the act, right? And I think that in the book, Dick writes, like, punishment was never much of a deterrent and could scarcely have afforded comfort to a victim already dead. And so he actually kind of portrays themes that are still in play today in a lot of ways because of so much that's going on in these new DAs and things like that. Like, so these themes are still, they're still salient current themes. It's really something else. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like how in the book too, it kind of shows, well, it does show in the movie as well, that when the system turns on him, he suddenly realizes how immoral this system is, how he's suddenly guilty before proven innocent. And that's a theme that we see in our real daily life, especially since 9/11. Everybody's guilty till proven innocent. And I just experienced that in my travels just, you know, a few days ago. And it's just reminded me of this novel when I was walking through the German airport and they were asking me questions like, the lady asked me, the customs lady asked me, did you pick up any packages from someone? Did someone give you a package? I'm like, wait, what? They were asking me these trick questions as if I'm guilty, for which I did not. But yeah, you want to, you know, I can see where that Nazi mentality came from, going through Germany airport. I was like, wow. But this is worldwide. So, anyway, not to get too off subject, but that's something I really have seen since 9/11, this system where it's basically you, anybody is a suspect now, you know, and there's domestic terrorists everywhere. And we are all just, you know, we have to vet everyone. And so that is something that Philip K. Dick saw from a long time ago.
Right. So this total climate of fear and paranoia and you're guilty before proof in a court of law, these types of things. And it kind of plays into this whole theme that he had of the precogs and how it I'm going to ruin the story for people, but, he ends up killing Kaplan, but not for the reasons you would think, because these different reports had different indications and changed. And he kind of, Dick wraps it up at the end of the novelette, but basically he kills him to maintain the pre-crime system, right? To avert this thing or something like that, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It becomes like the only thing he can do almost. I think in the novel anyway. The movie's a little bit different. But the novel, I think, is the raw material to go by. The movie has some aspects. There was something in the novel I wanted to bring up before I forget. In the novel, they say that the rest of the information is useful to other agencies of the suspects, you know, maybe not just the pre-crime, but everything else, they can recycle everybody else's information to where whatever agency they need to, you know. And that reminds me of today, our phones and technology listening to us, and they probably distribute different info to different agencies if they need to. And I think that was something that was well predicted in that novel.
Right, this data mining theme, right? So, and constant data. So it's part of the surveillance thing. And we're going to get into that because my slides, I talk about Palantir, right? And they're really doing pre-crime stuff. A lot of people have gone in, you know, notable journalists have talked about some of this pre-crime application information. So it really is this information leak on people. And I think that's part of the paranoid environment that Philip K. Dick, you know, writes about or creates in his novels. Like, everybody's got information on everybody. And I think if I remember correctly, in the book, in the novelette, I should say, the precog information is shared with the army too, to keep it like there's supposed to be checks and balances on the precog system, right? So they give it to the army or something like that. Yeah.
And the movie too made its own predictive programming. I don't think this was in the book. I took special note of this because I did watch the movie again for this episode. And the Tom Cruise character is, you know, after he's like a suspect, he's walking through all of these cameras and they facially identify him. And, you know, this was in 2002. They made this movie. We didn't have facial identification back then that I know of anyway. And all the ads, because they recognize him, they start saying his name, like, Anderton, you would like to buy this, you know. And that's more of the innocent side of things, like the more like
right.
at, you know, like sort of consumer based thing. But that's the thing is they want to know everything down to every detail. That's why they're making basically avatars of our lives online, so they can basically data mine us. And so this was put in the movie and it wasn't in the book, but I thought it was pretty prophetic in its own way.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And I was thinking and ruminating on this, and I think I like the use of the word avatar. It's getting really creepy, because even if you're an Alexa talking about, I need to buy insurance or something, then insurance ads will show up on your phone. Like, weird monitoring that is very much PKD-esque, unnerving, where I, you know, like, I was thinking before we did this show, I'm like, how can I give them the least amount of data about myself online? Like, that's exactly, like, I want to deconnect or something. There's got to be a new word, but like, I don't accept all this corporate data mining. And that's really kind of what is happening now. We can go into kind of my slides and I'll show how pervasive this is. And Palantir is just one of them. But like, this is recent things. Is when we were doing the show, we kind of pushed it back a little bit because I was traveling. Yeah. But this is March 1st, 2024. Canada considers house arrest for people at risk of committing hate crimes. So they haven't committed a crime yet.
Wow. So
this is recent. It's just incredible. It ties into this. How do they know? Well, they're taking data on you.
Yeah. Right? That's it. And they can decipher in their minds where you belong in their range of suspects, basically, like what you're into, and then they can sweep you and rake you into a pile of things that people, you know. And that's something I was going to talk about later too, but I might as well just bring it up. I hate how over the years people like us have gotten raked into a pile with things like Trump and Q and all that stuff when we were, you know, doing all this before. So we automatically get raked into that sort of suspect pile by just being involved in this information.
So true. So that's it. And that could be disingenuous too. They want to put you in that thing and then they can, you know, surveil you, right? Like, Trump is actually supposedly working with the Russians. Okay, surveil them there every day, right? So that's kind of the same thing. This is one of my least favorite people. Life in prison for speech crimes. Shocking crackdown. This is from Michael Schellenberger. Shocking crackdown by Canada's Liberal Party also seeks incarceration for crimes that haven't been committed. That's the Online Harms Act. Like, it's incredible.
Wow. Canada's like on the cutting edge of this, it seems like. Because you remember like, when the trucker rally happened, they were stopping people's bank accounts. I mean, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're doing it for the children too. They always, that's the public propaganda is always, we got to protect the kids. So we're going to put you in jail, you know? And people buy that stuff. They're out of their minds.
Oh, man.
Ireland hates. So that's why I retitled this. I was kind of going through, I always try to figure out a title, but that's why I wrote When the Minority Report Becomes the Global Majority. So it really is becoming global. And I'll show that in these slides. Ireland hate speech bill, protected characteristics, all this stuff. A meme may get you in jail. Kristi Noem signs a hate speech bill banning any speech remotely critical of Jewish behavior into law. So, wow. I mean, yeah, crazy stuff. Like, and that's the whole hate crime thing. This guy got busted, Dries Van Langenhove. He got sentenced to 1 year in prison for racist memes shared in a supposedly, right? It's up to somebody in a private group chat.
Wow.
Yeah. Private group chat busted. This is Jordan B. Peterson talking about this kind of stuff. So it's being bandied about. There's elements in this and other, like, there was a connection between and Wilder Penfield. So it's like you're going to talk about some of the other stuff he did, but he's literally an MK Ultra doctor referencing Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah.
Blade Runner. Yeah, that's basically Blade Runner. Penfield Mood Organ. So really crazy stuff. And then we've done that show on DARPA.
Right. This connects to that in a way, too. Yeah.
It does. DARPA. And then this is Scotland. So I've covered Ireland, Canada, Scotland now. Crime to speak, post an insult if it causes someone else to have hateful views. Like, what's that? What if you hate the misuse of the government?
Wow.
You know, misuse of government power. This Schellenberger brings up Black Mirror episode. Power to send police into homes to confiscate computers and cell phones in a bid to censor the entire internet. That's Ireland. I mean, it's Ireland. Crazy. Yeah. So Schellenberger saying it's alarming that having US, UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, Scotland, Brazil, and the EU. And it's called the Center for Countering Digital Hate, which is very subjective. Like,
yeah, they decide what
that really is. They're trying to tie in the whole genocide with the anti-Semitism. And that means that, like, if you reject the killing of children, you hate Jews. Like, that's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. But they're putting it together. And this is the other thing that's very much pre-COG, PKD, is this. This is from the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center. This is literally from your Attorney General, Merrick B. Garland, March 23rd, 2024. Valuable resources to pose a threat. It's right out of this pre-COG stuff.
It is.
Yeah.
Scary.
Scary. And it's all about protection. DOJ is ordering Google to release the names and addresses of YouTube viewers who watch specific videos. What? I'm sure I'm on almost every list possible.
Oh, me too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They're sending the FBI door to door. This is from Robbie Starbuck. This is Texas for posts they did online. These are literal videos you can see. These are FBI agents sent out to say your Facebook posts. This is the original, I think 1956 something. Anti-Semitism bill, very important. And then this is, we move on to Palantir, how Peter Thiel's secretive data company pushed into policing. A back-channel investigation reveals the difficult issues police and communities face when they adopt Palantir's data scooping. So it's data scooping, but it's also pre-crime. You have to kind of go, this is from Wired, but you have to kind of go into these articles. And what they're using these surveillance tools is to predict crime. And this is in Germany. So they contracted with Germany in 2022, got paid $26 million, and they are helping people to combat terrorism, organized crime, and serious forms of crime, right? This is the same thing right out of Minority Report. Stopping felonies, 99%.
Wow. So,
yeah, no, it's really a global thing. And then LAPD, this is from 2021, The Intercept, how the LAPD and Palantir use data to justify racist policing. In a new book, sociologists who spent months embedded with the LAPD details how data-driven policing tech washes bias. And then they try to get into the NHS, I think, in UK. That's a whole nother story. So they've, like, infiltrated. They're infiltrating all these other people with data. And then this is actually referencing Minority Report. You can see Tom Cruise here. Palantir, the special ops tech giant, wields as much real-world power as Google. Peter Thiel, CIA-backed data mining firm, honed its crime-predicting techniques against insurgents in Iraq. The same methods are now being sold to police departments. Will they inflame already tense relations between the public and police? I would say so. It was 2002. I think I said 2005. I was wrong.
Oh, 2002, right?
2002. Yeah. I can't believe that was that long ago.
I know. Well, a lot of time flies. It's amazing.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. And then he was going to promote a crime tracking app that was scrapped. I forgot the name of it. Predictive policing, that's what they're calling it now, which is really great. It's right. And then there's actually a documentary called Pre-Crime. And the subtitle is, We Know You Will Commit a Crime, You Just Don't Know It Yet.
That's, whoa.
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
No, I have not. Oh. It was made like 4 years ago. I need to watch it. But I came across it in my research this morning. But some of the in kind of the promo stuff you can see is total data mining. So they've got this guy, they got his date of birth, income, marital status, name, and credit card number, all just from, you know, stuff like that. And that's the whole idea of a smart city, right?
Yeah.
Japan developing pre-crime artificial intelligence to predict money laundering and terror attacks, right? That's what they say to the public. What else are they doing, right? They want it probably for total social control. So yeah, those are my slides. I just tried to want to show people or listeners that this is a global phenomenon. This whole minority reporting scary stuff is really
it is. Yeah, I didn't even realize it was that big. Jeez, wow, that's and the thing about like Canada is we're talking about Canada is I think it is that you can get more time. You don't even get life in prison for murder in Canada, but you could get it for hate speech.
Wow, that's amazing.
They're trying to say there's only determinism and not free will, and they're trying to say that a person couldn't have multiple outcomes to their decisions. I mean, that's kind of like how the novel even puts it too, is like, you know, there could be a lot of different ways this could happen, even the movie, but no, it's only one. It's hate crime, and it's total communism thinking. Yeah.
Right, no question about it.
Yeah, and it's not like anyone, and you know, like this hate speech. Like, okay, I think at this point, racist people, or whatever they're calling hate, are pretty much in the closet and like not like I don't know anybody who's truly a racist, I know they're out there, but like you know, that's not the biggest thing happening, and they act like there's these white supremacists hiding around every corner, and. You know, and it's like, it's not like anyone actually wants to say these days in mainstream society, at least, racial slurs or putting anyone down because of their sexuality or whatever. But it's about if you don't agree with this agenda of so-called equality, in quotes, that they are putting out a world. It's simultaneously too worldwide agenda, and that nobody is questioning why all these countries are singing from the same song sheets.
Good point. Yeah. No, it's incredible. And it overlaps with COVID and open borders and all this other stuff. It's like some kind of weird blueprint. But that's kind of part of one of the psychological ops is everybody's racist and there's secret racists everywhere and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And if you don't like open borders, you're a racist. You may not like the actual fact that you're bringing criminals or people you don't even haven't even been vetted. Or that they're using resources that your family paid for, but you're a racist, you know. So.
Right. And just to think, while this is happening, there's like crazy homeless people on our streets.
Oh.
Some insane things here. I see you just daily, like you drive by. And they're not harmful. They're not, you know, they're... Meanwhile, what people say is supposedly really harmful.
Right. Good point. I mean, my hometown was really, I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they don't really care about all the dangerous people that are on the street or the dirt. Really. It's like a bioweapon area. Like you can get sick. You can get freaking SARS or who knows, whatever that these people are carrying. They do not care. And they have the capacity to clean it up because they cleaned it up for Xi Jinping when he visited San Francisco. They literally have some kind of weird inversion of values that's off the charts. But
that's right. I remember here, well, this was like 15 years ago, we had the APEC conference, and so they cleaned up the corridor in which you come through in Honolulu from the airport. It was always kind of dirty looking. That they cleaned it up, like they made this nice median strip and planted these palm trees for it. I'm like, whoa, that's what it takes, you know. Otherwise, you know, they'll just leave it dirty and homeless running around screaming everywhere. Just funny how they do it when they want to do it for those reasons. But let me put in some slides here. Let me edit. Yeah. All right. Here we go. Actually, I'll probably go to the other side. Yeah. So here we have, it's called, this is Oregon. Let's go to the, this is California versus hate. You may have heard of this since your state, but, it's basically, there are programs in some U.S. states to encourage people to snitch on anyone doing anything perceived as hateful. So you can call this hotline. Same within or New York City here. They have the same kind of thing. A bunch of states have it. Maryland and I think it's quite a few. But basically they're saying, you know, this is Office for the Prevention of Hate Crimes. And it just depends on what they consider hate, you know. It says here, it's hate incidents. Examples include offensive jokes and malicious complaints of smell or noise, you know. And it's just, well, again, we could go into the homeless situation there. But, this is one in Oregon.
Did I just have an expression of hate, Loomis? Did I just say hate? Because things are dangerous or some of the leaders are terrible and incompetent? Like the mayor of San Francisco gets paid $400K a year and it's in a doom loop. Like the taxes are degrading, therefore public services are degrading. And then when the taxes go down, then public services go down. And if you complain about it, are you a racist or is that hate or is that criticism? Like you can't do better. What is that? And who's making that ultimate decision?
Yeah, they are. And it's just like, and it's whatever they consider to be hate or whatever you looked at online, you are probably put in this pile like we were talking about earlier. And I don't know, when you were a kid and I was a kid, you got beat up for being a snitch. Like kids would call you a narc, you know, and you would get your ass kicked. And now they're encouraging it, especially since COVID. I couldn't believe how much of a flip society took during that time where they could tell on your neighbors for having too many people over for Thanksgiving or something like that. Just insane how that
stuff, like communist snitching. That was like, they had a full snitch culture in like East Germany and the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
They're inching in on everyone by putting out the threat that you can't say anything basically against the agenda. And that's what it really is. It's the agenda. And they carefully wrap it up, this agenda, in things like equality for all, you know, this really flowery UNWEF language, you know, corporate PR language, and caring for the environment, you know, climate change, and which is, you know, which are all good things that are by themselves, but nobody normal would argue against, you know, those things, but they've weaponized these things and they've went down a slippery slope to limit our speech and to basically limit our thought patterns. I mean, down to really that.
Good point. That's a very good point. And I think that's the point, is to put you in a climate of fear where you're not critical and you don't speak up of things that go wrong. I think that's an excellent point. Because if you do speak up, the incentives are so far against you that you'll just be, you know, they'll go after your bank account and your reputation and your ability to make money.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, like this cashless society coming in, that's exactly what they can do. And pretty soon you'll be called a racist for speaking up against a cashless society. That's going to become hate speech. Right. They decide what that is. And, you know, I've already experienced a little bit of like backlash somewhere I went that was cashless. I was going to get a smoothie and the guy told me that basically they don't do cash because it helps to spread a disease. And I said, well, I don't agree with that. And he says, well, that's your opinion and, you know, whatever. But like someone like that could actually call one of these hotlines on me for refusing to be part of this, this agenda.
Right. Bias. One of the things that's scary about bias, I've had this conversation with many people, philosophically and in my opinion, reality, you can never get rid of bias. People are biased. They're older, younger, different colors, ethnicity, grew up somewhere else, different language, different gender, different educational background. It's a fool's errand. So even imposing the notion of bias is the imposition of like a disreality or dystopian reality. because you just can't get away. And people still, they just don't express their biases. You can't, it's like, you're right. It's a form of kind of mind degradation where you just can't even talk or analyze things because your analysis is somebody else's bias.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You can't think anything but the thoughts that they want you to have. And
right. And you have to be paranoid. And I think that paranoia is runs through Dick's work, but particularly this work. And the last sentence kind of stuck out of me from the Minority Report, which is better keep your eyes open. It might happen to you at any time. Right. So that's kind of like the pervasive fear that they get people with the propaganda. Like he sensed that in 56, and that's what Bush did. You know, you could die at any time. They did that with the Biden administration, right? If you don't get your shot, you could die.
Right.
It could happen to you at any time. So it keyed into this propaganda concept like almost 100 years ago.
Wow. Right. Or if you're not with us, you're with the terrorists. You know, right. Remember that. It's like,
yeah,
it's just total.
I also think at the end of Minority Report, he actually posits the notion of free will. Like he believes he has almost like a Western theological view towards free will, that people really do make choices. And I thought that was interesting because he said that even the precogs like had different views, right? So there's a majority and a minority, and they could choose, he could choose which one to do, right? And I think that was an interesting aspect of him, is he didn't like take this kind of neo postmodern nihilism, like there's no free will, that what's that guy from Israel talks about, like you have no free will, which is really a philosophical view.
Harari.
I think that it was to Dick's credit that he kind of wrapped it up with, yeah, I did make this choice, this was my choice. But
there was you probably heard of this, it was in 2006 in Miami, Florida, the Federal Bureau of Investigation arrested 7 men who belonged to what was described as a homegrown terrorist cell. The federal officials asserted that the accused individuals, who would come to be known as the Liberty City 7, intended to carry out domestic terrorist activities, including a plan to blow up Sears Tower in Chicago. But they never actually, you know, but this is this kind of pre-crime thing even back then, that, you know, even if they weren't good people, I don't know. I don't know a whole lot on that story, but I pulled that out because I was like, wow, they were even kind of aiming toward that back then. Just anybody who, because 9/11 brought in all that paranoia, like I was saying earlier, you know, we're talking about how everybody was guilty till proven innocent, and it's never stopped. You still have to do all that stuff through TSA, airport. You still have
to.
It's only actually gotten worse.
It's gotten worse. I was traveling and I deliberately chose to drive instead of having to go through all the grief. In addition to the fact that the planes really aren't safe, at least in my opinion. They had 3 Boeing like mishaps in the last 48 hours. But I really didn't want to go through the security. The security was what really bothers me, is like the full invasive security. So I took a little road trip recently. Do you have time to take a few questions?
Sure. Yeah. And then I got a couple of other.
Yeah, finish the slides. Yeah.
Let's see. So this is other work that some people might want to check out of Philip K. Dick. This one is called Nick and the Glimmung. It's basically predicting 3D printing. It's about an alien who can print anything it is presented with. So, you know, he had a lot of insight on what was coming through somehow. I don't know. And then they made a movie out of this one. We Can Remember It For You Wholesale and other classics. This is what they made Total Recall from. And basically it's injecting a fake vacation in your brain. And you kind of see this again in another movie. You may have seen it called The Island, with Ewan McGregor and what's her name. But anyway, they say, oh, we're all going to an island. And it was basically, this is something that was, they were clones, spoiler alert, but they programmed this into people's memory when they were created, that there's this island that you can go to if you get this lucky lottery pick. But yeah, so injecting this into like this, what do you call those? Basically, virtual reality goggles, right? So I highlighted a couple episodes back on my show about the World Economic Forum basically saying that most people won't be able to travel, so they'll have to do it virtually through VR goggles and stuff like that.
Hey, Zuckerberg's there to help you, right? Meta's there to help you. Crazy. Yeah. And they'll probably inject you with nanobots and that certain thing and just give you a, permanently change your brain. So who knows?
Ooh, yeah. Don't want to know about that one. But yeah, then there's Flow My Tears, about a singer who wakes up in a world where he lacks many documents now required to avoid being arrested and sent to a labor camp. So again, kind of just predicting this dystopian future that's coming in now, basically. You know, all the documents that you must have, the Real ID Act, you know, all that.
Right. Wow.
And then we have another one, The Man in the High Castle. And this is, that's about, it imagines an alternative history in which the Nazis won World War II. And of course, they kind of did when you consider Project Paperclip and all that. But, it's kind of worth, I haven't read it, but I definitely on my list. And then, or there's one more I thought. There's one I didn't have the slide for, but it's called Ubik or Ubik. It has basically the internet of everything. They, you know, basically describing that you can't get into the door of your apartment because it's automated. And the main character ends up arguing with the door because he doesn't have the right change to put in the door. And he tries to break down the door and it threatens to sue him. And then, you know, it's just totally predicting this automated, fully automated world that we're heading right into. Yeah.
That's like that. What's that key? The video that's on your door that watches everything. Like that's where that ties right into Alexa. It's part of the Amazon, you know, suite of companies, but it's like this total, what is it, iRing or whatever it is.
Totally. Yeah.
But I also did a show with the PsyOp Cinema guys. We analyzed the Scanner Darkly
too. Yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah. Yeah, so I have to listen to that, but that's another one that should be...
another dystopia. Basically, the movie is made, and it's basically one cycle of a police state, bringing the drugs in, drugging people, policing them, in a horror loop. And it actually kind of ties into the current, never-ending loop that some of these people get caught in with the law enforcement system, right? And I've had guests on, like very sophisticated guys, doctors who teach, you know, these jurisprudence and public policy about how, and it mirrors the Scanner Darkly, right? So the government brings in the drugs, allows the drugs to be here, gets people on drugs, penalizes the drugs, puts them into the system, makes money off them in the system, and then gets them out, gets them on drugs again, makes money on the whole loop, right? It's just unbelievable. So that people get so caught familiar. In. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally a dystopia. I mean, I think that a lot of these people can't get, once you get also stained with a jail conviction on certain things for drugs, it's harder for you to get everything, right? So it's harder for you to get an apartment, a job, and all that other stuff. So then you probably want to do drugs, and then you end up back in jail. So it's a Philip K. Dick nightmare. But let's see. I've got a few questions.
Sure.
I do not claim to be a PKD scholar by any means. Some of the listeners probably know much more than me. And we have 100 listeners on X right now. Just I didn't really even announce. I mean, I announced kind of to my followers, but thanks for listening. And you can find all of my stuff at William Ramsey Investigates podcast for new viewers and Chanted Down Radio for Loomis. But I did want my kind of cursory research to get ready for this show. I realized how much he really wrote. I didn't know that there was that many short stories. I always thought of him as a novelist for some odd reason. And his whole Vallis thing is a whole nother show. How curious that was, that whole, he was like drifting in some kind of alternate reality. It was like some kind of, he had a very, either some people call it a break, psychological breakdown, or maybe an insight. I don't know.
But, yeah. I don't know. Was he kind of a psychic? I mean, guy was
they're still talking about it. You and I are talking about him today, 2024. So, like, was he way far ahead? And a lot of his stuff and his works are theological. They're philosophical, theological questions. Like, they're very profound. And it sets him apart from so many of his peers, like, who did kind of, like, maybe more adventurous science fiction or something like that. But maybe that's the stuff that really stands and, like, sticks with us today, like Heinlein's. I've done a show, Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land. So maybe those kind of things are why these books and these authors are still relevant.
I don't know. Well, they just came out. Like, I guess if you think about it, he came out of World War II. So with that mindset of how the Nazis were going and everything, I guess maybe someone could pick up on some kind of a wavelength like that to, I don't know, to predict how this could go. And I mean, even one of his books, like I was mentioned, The Man in the High Castle, is as if the Nazis had won. So maybe he picked up on that. I don't know.
Maybe those things. I think he was a pure author. I don't think he ever was like a casual guy who went home and wrote. He was like, that was his life. Like, he was a guy who made money selling stuff, and that's really it. I think he had a less than stable kind of family. I don't think he ever made money, but I think his the licensing for his estate makes a lot of money. It's my understanding. Like, they pay $1 million to license some of these shows of his. Like, yeah. Significant amounts of money is my understanding. Let's see. Somebody's question. Maple Bob asks, is Palmer Eldritch physical appearance the inspiration for Darth Vader? I don't know. Maybe somebody else knows. Do you know that?
No, I don't. No. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of like I'd say that's why I'm kind of giving a caveat. I don't know some of all the details. There's a lot to know about PKD. I forgot which author it was. Somebody did he was a scholar, and he did two biographies, one of Crowley and one of PKD, because they're so such unique kind of characters. Dillagaff asks, I'd like to know how much his time in Canada with the rehab ex-Calais influenced PKD's life after his breakup with, I think, his first or second wife. I don't know that either.
I don't know that one either. I guess I didn't look too much into his, like, personal life. I tried to look for any ties with any occult or dark things, but no, he was just a freelance guy, as far as I know.
That's my understanding too. Is it Tinterest, Slick Distant? Is all common access affidavits embedded against any state interest? I don't know what that means. Let's see. Is it?
I know Slick Distant. Yeah, he's cool. I like that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Is it true?
Embedded against state interest? I don't know. I don't know that one. And then Maple Bob adds, best film adaptation of PKD is Network. Howard Beale's Humanoids are PKD's androids, while Diana and Max's love affairs lifted from Stigmata. Okay, well, I didn't know that. But I do know Network. That was very popular, right? That whole speech.
Oh, yeah. That movie. Yeah. Huh.
Well, that's kind of about it. Thanks for listening. I had 100 listeners on Twitter. That's interesting. More than on YouTube, which something... And what are you up to, Loomis? What do you see on your horizon, and where can people listen to your podcast?
Well, let's see. Like I said, I'm making a documentary, and that's spending a lot of time. I've been filming it a lot of places in the world, and I've been working with a few people on that. Not too much, but mostly me. But and then additionally, I'm going to return my research back into the Lahaina fires, which we covered. I'm gonna have a guest on soon talking about that, and just kind of, you know, I don't know, I don't have a big prediction of how the show goes sometimes, but I basically, like, the documentary, like I say, is making taking up a lot of my time. However, I want to do some stuff with you again, and Sean McCann around. And I got Sean coming on eventually. We're going to talk about his how he looked at Eyes Wide Shut and how it lines up. I don't know if he's talked with you about that or not, but that's a really interesting one.
Yeah, we did 4 hours on Eyes Wide Shut, so we've done a long show. And he's done a lot of recent presentations, mm-hmm. So I think he's pretty. I did a show with Steven Snyder. He put out a book on Kubrick in general called The Minotaur, which is a really good book. I recommend that.
Cool. Cool.
But yeah, Kubrick's another kind of character in line with Crowley and Deck, who are like, who predicted a lot of stuff and also were very kind of potent creative figures. I think it's very, and I think that Dick will always go down in history as really one of the greats. Is like science fiction, how much fiction is in his science and fiction, right?
Yeah.
That's that question.
Yeah.
Yeah, is there anything else you'd like to add or anything I missed before?
No. Yeah, if anyone wants to listen to Chant It Down, I'm on all podcast players. I've been doing it for 11 years now in June. Like I said, I'm a little jet lagged, but June will be 11 years on Chant It Down. So I always tell people, don't be afraid to go in the archives, because I've basically talked about all this kind of stuff happening for many years, and it's all still relevant to today. Just like your show. And thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, thanks for coming back.
Look forward to working with you again soon.
Likewise. So yeah, guys, Luma said about the archives, don't be afraid to look in my archives. I've got over 1200 shows and 9 of them are with Luma. So you can go back and just kind of check that out. You can use Podcast Addict and do the find search and just type in either Chant or Loomis, and all of his shows will pop up. And they're all great. I think they're all great shows, and they're all, I think,
important
and timely. And the Lahaina situation, it kind of just hit the news cycle and dropped off into the never world. And it's an incredible story. The fact that they haven't even started to rebuild and they just walled it up like it's done is just so sick. And it's insight into the way these monsters think. Like, they don't even care. I don't even know if Biden showed up and did a memorial or anything.
He showed up and he said that the residents of Lahaina get $700 per household or something.
It's like a mockery. It's a humiliation type thing. It's such a joke that if you can give $60 billion to kill people in Ukraine and get us to really the brink of nuclear war and not help out kind of your own citizens is just another stain on probably the worst administration the U.S. has ever had to endure. I don't think there's anything comparable.
Think you're right. It's just a progression of worse from before and before before.
They just make the stupidest decisions and the dumbest. They're the dumbest, most corrupt, vile, human-hating people you can imagine. That's the whole administration. It's not just by the Crypt Keeper and the Hyena. It's the whole squad. They should just put a big wall around the freaking White House and keep those people from ever staining this country again. It's just so gross.
I don't think there's a place where they should live except for maybe Komodo Island.
Yeah, Komodo Island's good. A jail, you know, some kind of jail.
Sure.
Like, open it. Send them to Gaza, something.
Yeah.
Get them away from here. Like, they're terrible. Like, you don't want them to ever share a country with people that vile and evil. Like, it's just so disturbing as hell. That's a real dystopia.
Yeah. They're the worst people in the whole world. You know,
they are. It's not the American people. There was a recent survey, and like at least 75%. I mean, you got to question these things, but I know this is off topic. But they say, why are we doing this war in Ukraine? So they're not making a decision. The American public is detached from its leaders, and these leaders are making decisions that they know they don't have to answer for. So we're in a strange position where that's a standard checks and balances where people actually have to worry about their vote. Don't apply because the votes are stolen. The ballots are stolen. So they can just make these deranged things without ever thinking their constituents and just wasting our tax dollars and driving inflation up.
Recently, since I just traveled, I mean, confirmed it to me again and again. Every country I've been to and every place that I've seen, everybody talks bad. It's the government's the problem. It's not the people. And again, it just reminds me, you know, it's like the governments are carrying out these things on, you know, not on the people's best interests ever. So,
right. Yeah. They don't represent our best interests. Why are we at Russia's border? Who cares? I've met Russians, great people, the normal. I don't affiliate with the political parties or anybody over there.
Sure.
But they're probably just like us. Like, what is going on? What are these governments making? I'm not saying their government's making bad decisions, but it's like, what? I don't know a Russian ever did anything bad to me or like in my heritage. Like, I don't understand the gripe. Like, it's something in these political power political politicians thinking they're like sociopathic or something's going on where they're making money from the grift and they don't really care about the, nobody's ever cared about the people who died in Lahaina, in my opinion, and the 500 or 600,000 people who died in Ukraine fighting this bogus war.
Nope.
It's totally crazy. We have no representation. Just like Billy said, you're absolutely right. It's really crazy. Anyway, really, that's,
yeah.
It's kind of off topic, but.
Well, no, yeah. It's good. And I just wanted to say about Lahaina, just since we brought it up, is that the crazy thing is I never hear again, like basically except for my show and maybe a few others, that no one is giving any backlash on the police who held all those people in that traffic jam to not leave Lahaina and they burned alive in their cars. I don't ever hear any like anybody saying anything bad about that at all. And it just amazes me.
It is absolutely amazing. Why isn't there a commission on what went wrong, how they let it happen, how they didn't foresee it, why they made the kids stay there? There's like at least a fake commission, like at least the Warren Commission was fake, but they kind of actually had a commission or something. But it's just so crazy. When you look at all of the Biden administration, it is the worst decisions over and over and over again. I just cannot believe how demented these people are. They're off the charts. It's just like, whoa, open borders, inflation, wasting money.
Yeah.
Stolen a ballot, left fraud. They're like proving in court now in these like, you know, hearings that there's just total ballot fraud in Georgia and Wisconsin. And those were all validated. And they're just going to keep going and moving forward and pull it off again. So we're going to have another 4 years of no representation. It's going to be crazy. So things are looking like a Philip K. Dick.
They are.
And all right, sorry.
That's why we got to have fun with our lives and enjoy them as much as we can, and you know, do what we can while we can. That's all I have. That's what I say to everybody. But
yeah, try to have as much fun, because it's looking rough. Anyway, it's Loomis, Chant It Down Radio. Title of today's show was "When the Minority Report Becomes the Global Majority." So, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening.
Yeah, all thank right. you. Thanks everyone for listening as well. Stay all there. Right.